Thanks, everyone, for joining us for another season of Smart City Policy Stories. This is our podcast where we're talking to local leaders around the country and maybe even sometimes around the world, people who are championing great things for our local communities. Today, we get to bring somebody to you who's doing some great work around libraries. We're going to have a really neat conversation with Brooks Rainwater. Brooks, how are you doing?
Doing good. Great to join you here.
So, Brooks, tell us about the association you're with now and tell us what you're doing there. But then I'm going to talk for a few seconds about your past. But tell us what you're up to now.
Absolutely. So I'm the president and CEO of the Urban Libraries Council, and we're an innovation action tank working on behalf of the leading public library systems in North America. So we have right at 182 members, which equates to about a third of the population in the US and Canada. And so a lot of what we're focused on is bringing those leaders together and providing them with best practices, research and data and advocacy on their behalf. So we're digging into the issues that are important for libraries right now, whether it's AI, anti-racism, or everything happening within the culture wars right now and book banning. We are very much pushing against anti-democratic measures that we're seeing across the country. At the same time, we're laser focused on literacy. You know, libraries at their heart are providing children to adults with literacy opportunities. And at the same time, an issue that's near and dear to my heart and always has been entrepreneurship. So libraries are serving as those places to help community entrepreneurs, you know, really digging deeply into those ecosystems, bringing people together, training them, and helping build small businesses in our communities. So I always like to say libraries are so much more beyond books, but they certainly are books as well.
You know, they are so much more than books. And it's funny, you know, we're going to get into that a little bit, but what they mean to communities and what they mean to individuals is so important. And it really is so important. So I'm excited to learn more and talk a little bit more about the Urban Libraries Council. But you came to this organization armed with a lot of policy background, policy experience, and local government experience. Tell us a little bit about what you were doing before Urban Libraries Council.
Absolutely. I was at the National League of Cities for just about 9 years, running the Center for City Solutions there. And so the center was a research center. It was focused on technical assistance directly to cities, as well as leadership education. So we just did a lot of incredible work on behalf of cities. And none of that work could have been done without the amazing mayors, council members, and city staff out there that are just on the ground every day, you know, doing everything possible to help the community members that live in those cities. And so really, really impressed with all the work that we were able to do there and the work that NLC continues to do. You know, my own personal research interests back in the day were really centered around the future of work and all the workforce shifts that we're seeing in local democracy, because, you know, democracy at its heart is really the best when it's closest to the people.
You know, it's so interesting. We talk to so many people, and of course, you know, we're so focused through this conversation around local government, but it really does seem time and time again with the changing dynamics in the country, both nationally and at the state level, that it's really local governments who are probably making far more headway and are really, basically they're where the rubber meets the road, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, they always talk about, you know, filling potholes as job number one. If you're mayor, got to make sure the roads work.
You know, and it's so funny, we've seen through the National League of Cities and U.S. Conference of Mayors or the National Association of Counties and so many other organizations where this strengthening network of local leaders are really helping to pass and create these best practices and this really kind of momentum for how government should operate. And they also do it in a bipartisan fashion. Are you saying that at the Urban Libraries Council, are folks working together fairly in a fairly bipartisan manner?
Oh, absolutely. At the end of the day, you know, libraries are not political places. They're there for all community members. They welcome everybody, rich, poor, housed, unhoused, you know, wanting to make sure that they're inclusive places that bring everybody to the conversation. You know, at the end of the day, we're able to kind of create these spaces for important conversations, whether we're talking about politics, whether we're talking about kind of changing economic systems, whether we're bringing authors in to talk about, you know, really important pointed books. Libraries are these community spaces. One of the things, particularly with my background in urban policy, that I continuously find is that when we talk about anchor institutions within any given city, that's your library. I mean, it's your cultural anchor that's really, and it's also indoor public space. You know, where else do you have indoor public space in most cities? You don't. You know, nobody wants to hang out in City Hall, but everybody wants to go into an amazingly designed, beautiful library where you can meet with people, you know, grab a coffee and read a book all at the same time.
Isn't that incredible? I never thought about that way. I mean, indoor public space. And when you think about like the great urban libraries that popped to my mind very quickly, before we built ours in Austin, I was really excited about Salt Lake City.
Mm-hmm.
I was really excited about Seattle when I went there. There was a handful of others that I remember going to and thinking, wow, this is really impressive. And I hope the one that we've built here in Austin is reflective of those best practices. I hope that we wound up doing something great here. And maybe before I skip forward, let me get your feedback. Is our did our central library did come together well?
Oh, I love it. I mean, Roosevelt Weeks, the director there, is just an incredible leader. And when you walk into that library, you're just wowed. I mean, the multi-story height of it, you know, all of the staircases going everywhere. I mean, it's just absolutely amazing. You know, I've been there a few times now. And of course, the outside of it too, just draws you in. It's just like this beautiful architecture. And I think it speaks to, you know, that civic well-being, that civic bringing togetherness that we want our public spaces to be. You know, too often in America, we're not willing to invest in our public spaces the way people do in Europe and Asia and many other places around the world. You know, we don't have a built-out train system the way, you know, most other countries do. So our train stations don't often reflect that civic spiritness, but libraries do. And I'm so glad that they do, because, again, they are spaces for everybody.
You know, and talk about like we're in this challenging time for libraries, but it's also an exciting time. You know, to the point that you just made, we're seeing people make these great investments in libraries. And a quick scan of how libraries do when they do a bond election or some kind of similar election is it seems like they typically do better than almost anything else on a bond. Like, it seems like no matter what, you can safely say libraries are really well supported by communities if you were to use elections as a, you know, kind of a data point. Do you find that to be true?
Absolutely. I mean, we see this in public polling that people are drawn to their libraries, want to support them. We see it in community survey work that's done by libraries and local governments, you know, continuously, that everybody can find an attachment to a library in different ways. You know, whether it's, you know, some people it might just be nostalgia that they remember taking their children there or going there when they were younger. Other people are avid users of, you know, books or anything else that they're taking out of the library. You know, some people are using them. We have tool sharing in certain libraries. You know, I mean, you have all of these different things, maker spaces, you know, people going there for training on financial literacy and entrepreneurship. Even public health and social services are being offered in many of our public libraries, as in many ways, libraries have had to take up the slack on the social safety net that we're not seeing done at the federal level or even the state level.
You know, here we are talking about, and I don't know if you can get into advocacy, but maybe you could just give me a heads up if there's one that's on the ballot. Here we have November looking down upon us. Is there a library somewhere in America that's on a ballot? Is there a bond initiative that you know of?
I mean, there's a number of bond initiatives out there, you know, to continue to support libraries or to add additional library branches. So, you know, we see these rather regularly, either in kind of November elections aligning with federal elections, but also in local government elections, which we both know happen all year. You know, so certainly, I think that we'll see continued support for libraries. And it's also interesting, too, because library structures are different depending on where you are. I mean, for the most part, they are city or county agencies, but you also have independent districts that are overlapping between multiple cities and counties. And so you have a different structure, different taxing structures that exist, but all of them with kind of the same goal, which is to support our public library systems.
It's so funny because I was thinking about this conversation and I was thinking about the fact that when the internet was really created, probably shortly thereafter, people were starting to say, well, this is the end of the library, that we don't need it anymore. And to your point earlier about becoming a place where you can check out tools or how people are starting to weave them into other things, I feel like what we're really seeing in America is since that advent of the internet and maybe, you know, some kind of subsequent time for there to be some evolution, it almost seems like libraries become more important, which is so fascinating. And then there's actually some, really cool technology that allows people to utilize their library card without even having to go in. But let me stop there for a second. You know, you've been working in local government for such a long time. You certainly had to have those conversations or kind of feel at least the tail of those conversations that maybe started in the late 90s and went through the early 2000s about the internet basically meaning the end of libraries.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember those conversations because everybody was like, oh, the internet's going to make libraries obsolete. And in fact, libraries have become more important for communities. And it gets to the basic nature of libraries, which is that they serve community needs. In some communities, you might see a library branch that is almost wholly books, and that's what the community is asking for. In another place, they may spend, you know, the floor space may be only 30 or 40% books, and a lot of it's utilized for children's services or for senior services. You know, all of these things, again, it needs to be neighborhood based. It needs to be based on what the community is asking for. In some, you know, underserved areas, we might have more community services, more public health delivery, more social services available, more training. And that, again, is what libraries have always done, but I think even more so in the last couple decades, as we've moved into this place of purely community serving organizations, rather than the historical nature of libraries being solely a repository of books. And so I think you don't ever want to gloss over the kind of core literacy component of having books at a library, but you also want to make clear that these are community serving institutions. And so kind of creating that space for people to come together and offering what people need is what we're going to always do.
You know, so because you had worked at NLC and you're so talking so much about the future and technology and so much of the conversations you would have, what I'm fascinated by is the number of people who, A, are already using, and there's probably a term of art for these, but the digital versions of either books or the audio versions of books that you can check out through services that are associated with libraries. They're either already using them or when they find out about them, they feel like they were touched by a magic wand. I mean, you think they are like, just, are you kidding me? I can get audiobooks through a service? Has that kind of been a breath of fresh air for libraries, these services?
Absolutely. I mean, again, it's meeting people where they are and offering them the services that they need. So electronic content is what we call it. So e-content and the usage rates, as you can imagine, spiked tremendously during the pandemic and created somewhat of a shift on kind of electronic versus paper content that people were indeed checking out. And so you see some library systems that might have more e-content circulating than traditional books and magazines. And so I think that this is the wave of the future, but at the same time, a lot of people still want to have, you know, regular books available. And also from a circulation perspective, there are a lot of kind of issues that I'm not going to get into today on the e-content side, and what we have to pay for an ebook versus a normal paper book and how many times it can circulate before the license expires. There's a lot of ins and outs that if we wanted to get real nerdy on these topics, we could have a fun time. But suffice it to say that, again, I really think that e-content is one of those pieces that, you know, people just love. And to your point, so many folks don't even realize that exists, but once they do, they're sold.
Oh yeah. You know, I know the different library systems have different versions of this. I could say the two that I know of. You might be a little bit more, you know, kind of constrained in your role, but Hoopla and Libby. I mean, the minute you turn somebody on to Hoopla and Libby, I can't say enough. It's like you told them that we're back in Girl Scout cookie season. I mean, they're like so excited. I can't believe it. You know, yeah, it's pumpkin spice latte time again at the coffee shop. I mean, the level of enthusiasm when they learned about that. Now, I didn't know that there's also a platform, if you will, to check out music. And so I just learned about this myself, too, which is funny because the person who told me said, we laugh and laugh when we hear about all of you goofs that are paying for music when your library and your library card will give you a bigger library of music for free.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think all of it, again, is what makes libraries so unique is they create, you know, these amazing public spaces that they provide for people. They let you take out content for free. And they're just a great third space for people to come together that, again, is free. So I think the operative word here is free. And we structured them as a society to create those opportunities for everyone. And kind of that openness and that ability to invite everybody in is also what's core to public libraries.
You know, when I was a young man, and we all have them, those teachers, those librarians, those people who you said that person made a difference. Mm-hmm. And for me, it was a librarian. And it was a librarian who basically asked me to look at a new book that had come in and give her my feedback. Mm-hmm. And looking back at it now, I think she was probably just using a ploy to, you know, get me to investigate a new book. And it worked for sure. But what I took from that is the sense of adventure that you get when you're in a library, the sense of adventure that you get, because as opposed to a new bookstore, I do think used bookstores have a similar sense of adventure, but as opposed to a new bookstore where it's only the most curated list of probably new releases or classics that are in the bookstore, what you have in a library is you've got such a fascinating amount of titles that might be right around the book that you decide you want to search for.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you're going and you're searching for a book on, you know, boat making or a book on Harry S. Truman, and surrounding that book are a bunch of books of similar themes and similar topics that you would never otherwise grab. And now you're pulling them off the shelf and you're opening them and you're saying, wow, that's taking me somewhere I didn't know that I would where I would go. So, you know, going back to that kid that I was, or the kids that walk into libraries every day, do your librarians, your members still talk about that it's still bringing these young people? That's this great tool that it is, that it's making young people have an opportunity, an adventure that they would not otherwise get?
Oh, yeah. I think that is core to what librarians do every day. You know, with the training that librarians have, you know, they're able to kind of curate content to look at the overall collections in a way that nobody else can. Because of that background, that knowledge and understanding, they can create those collections that kind of spark that joy in a young child, you know, as they're learning something new. And again, helps them find something else that they might not have thought of. And I'd say the other big thing that librarians do such an incredible job at is making sure that collections represent the full scope of people that live in a community, you know, gay, straight, Black, white, you know, all of these folks. You want to make sure they are represented within the book collections that you have, so that people feel like they have a space that is also their own. And I'd say, honestly, this has been one of the challenges that we're seeing kind of like in the political space lately, is that there are a number of states that have tried kind of push back against that openness, first starting in school libraries, but it's also made its way into the public library sphere, trying to take away from librarians and from the library space the ability to curate those collections that are truly, once again, representative of the people that live in those communities.
So, you know, kind of pivoting a little bit to the culture wars, do you see an end in sight? Because this, frankly, from a perspective of a father of an 8-year-old and a man who is so influenced by my time in a library, and I, you know, it's just, you see it every day when a kid opens a book. It seems like such a ridiculous terrain to hold a culture. I mean, over a library. And it breaks my heart. It breaks my heart for the kids. Mm-hmm. I'd love to hear you say that there's an end in sight at some point. What do you think?
Yeah, so I do believe there is an end, but I do have to be honest that I've been an optimist my entire life. If anything, my optimism has been tempered from a timeline perspective. I used to be more of a short-term optimist. I'm more of a mid to long-term optimist now. I think that we're just struggling with an incredibly tenuous political situation that's not only playing out in the US, but that's playing out globally right now. The rise of populism, both here and overseas, has created an environment where you see just blatant censorship taking place. Here within particularly a number of more conservative states that have kind of taken upon themselves to ban books. But again, it's happening overseas. It's not just an American issue. But I do think that long term, we get to a place where once again, we realize that kind of the better nature of humanity is openness. It's creating space for people to learn, to wonder, to want, to know something more than themselves. And I think that that really is one of the biggest challenges with what you see happening with these book bans. It's diminishing knowledge that people have. It's creating a more constrained environment that people live within, to where they not only can't find out about themselves, but they can't find out about other people. That it's creating a dynamic, frankly, where we're pitting people against one another and somebody is saying this is how things are with nothing to back it up. Providing people with greater knowledge creates a more open society. It creates a more dynamic society. And frankly, it creates stronger economy and all of these other pieces that make America and the long-term American dream thrive.
You know, it's so funny you say that. I think all the time about the fact that here we are in Austin, Texas, that has been on a fairly, decent upward trajectory for 25 years or so, economic growth and success. And the one thing that I was lucky to hear when we would have so many new employers coming to Austin is that their number one reason that they would say that they wanted to come to Austin, Texas, or the greater Austin area was because of the openness, mm-hmm. Because of the allowance to embrace diversity of ideas and people. And that it, when you see these culture wars going on, it seems like that concept isn't being considered. I'll put it another way. I had a 70-something year old priest not long ago who sort of chastised a member of his congregation in front of a group of people in a polite way, but kind of firm. You didn't want to push back on him at all. And the member of the congregation was asking about redeveloping the area around the church to be kind of nicer and maybe get a more high-end clientele around the church. And the priest pushed back very quickly and said, "Sir, I think if you want this to look like a sterile environment where everyone looks the same and where everybody's coming with the same ideas, then we're going to be far more poor because of it. We're not going to grow. We're not going to evolve. We're not going to be able to be open to new ideas and the richness that other cultures and concepts bring us." Yeah. And I think that's something you get with a library that's able to operate freely. I mean, it's just heartbreaking that this goes on and it has gone into the library system. How are the librarians doing through all this? I mean, here they're at the front line of a culture war. They are obviously in a job that is very difficult, mm-hmm. No matter what size community you're in. I'm sure a library is a, kind of a time consuming challenging job, no matter what, although I know also very rewarding, except for financially, probably not the best paid department. So how are librarians just in general doing through all this?
I mean, it's a challenge. It's a broad challenge that I would say we've seen play out over the last 5 to 10 years in the public sector at large. And so I'll take it back a bit, to my NLC days, where when I was there, and they continue to do great research about all of the challenges being faced by local public officials, did some research on how mayors, council members, school board members, and public health members during the pandemic were just pilloried and had actual violent tendencies towards them. You know, people were coming at them both in meetings as well as just like terrible things happening to local officials and their families. And we've seen that type of behavior make its way into the library sector as well, with threats, you know, going after librarians' children in schools and saying things to them, you know, just terrible things playing out. People have lost their jobs, and it's all happening at the same time as we know there's more stressors in society right now. So you see public safety incidents that have been rising both in libraries as well as in broader cities. And so it's kind of this dual nature of having politics seep into a place that frankly should be more apolitical at the same time as seeing kind of the broader societal challenges that we're facing. So it's a rough time, even as there are all these great things happening. You know, I feel for all of our members as they struggle with some of these challenges that are now happening, as these, you know, being the lead of a public library is a public role, but not in the way it has become, you know, historically. You know, I think it's like many other jobs in the public sector that have been, you know, put out in the public in a very different way than people expected going in.
Well, I hope they feel a lot of support too. I'll tell you an interesting thing. I was going to make a comment there for a second about how absolutely wimpy, small, petty, ridiculous it would be for any citizenry to take out negative feelings and, even bringing it to the point of any kind of, you know, bad words, threats, anything like that on the librarian. What a small and terribly petty thing. But I'll kind of spin it to a more positive thing. My daughter had accidentally kept a book past its due date. And she wrote a letter apologizing to the librarian. And, you know, she at the time, I think, was probably still only 7. And she has asked in the past, and I think other kids would do the same, is there a way to thank the librarians? And I sit there and I think to myself, that's what hopefully more parents would embrace, is that we should be thanking these people who are doing so much. Because I do know it's become also the tough job, because they're also starting to act more in terms of, well, I would say it seems like the role might have to start taking on, especially in our urban libraries, a little bit more kind of social work at times. I mean, they've had to expand from what many people would have thought is the traditional concept of a librarian. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, again, being community serving organizations, we need to meet community members where they are. And so whether that's unhoused community members that are coming into our libraries and needing different types of support than residents who are housed, you know, whether that is thinking about different equity deserving groups within our communities and what types of needs they have versus others. And I think in all of these instances, librarians step up to the plate and say, we are here to do what we need to do to make sure the community has what they should have. You know, and I think at the end of the day, that's what it is that's just key and core to librarianship. They curate knowledge and they create a space for people to learn, for people to grow, for people to better understand the world.
Boy, and we need that. That is for sure. So funding it. So we have the IMLS, the Institute of Museums, Libraries, and Services, right? Am I getting that right? Yeah. Some grants, some federal funds go through, I guess, the state library system, and then ultimately might get to, you know, local and urban libraries. But when you look at what some of the different grant levels are, not huge. No. Is there a path to lobbying for increasing funding through the IMLS?
Absolutely. And so, you know, we just launched an advocacy program this year at the Urban Libraries Council, and a lot of our goals really center around the idea that we want to create more infrastructure funding. We want to find grant funding, existing grant funding within the federal government to support some of the health and social services programming that we're doing. You know, definitely care a lot about literacy, intellectual freedom, and then economic opportunity, entrepreneurship, trying to find, you know, sources of resources at the federal level to support those. At the end of, you know, when we think about this in totality, the infrastructure piece is really key. because so many of our larger library systems have buildings that are, you know, 50, 60, 100, 150 years old. And there's only so much money that can support those at the local level. And there isn't a large amount of federal funding whatsoever going towards libraries. And so in the long run, would love to move to a place where IMLS is supported at a much higher level. And I think collectively looking at, you know, education as one example, that by far education is funded at the local and state level, but it's still receiving upwards of 7 or 8% of funding from the federal government. Public libraries are nowhere near that, you know, it's a very small number indeed. And so, you know, understanding the role that public libraries are making in our community and thinking about ways that we can accelerate some of that funding over time is something I spend a lot of my day to day doing.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking about the fact that Laura Bush has the Laura Bush grants, which ultimately go to libraries. You know, she's arguably a local here in Austin. I mean, certainly President Bush was once Governor Bush, and we used to always enjoy seeing Laura Bush around town. If not for any other reason other than I think she used to be a teacher, but I think she also may have used to be a librarian. Do you know if that's true?
I believe so. Or maybe she might have been a school librarian. So that might have been.
Right. And, you know, but to see her continue to support education and to think that there is somebody who at least tilts on the side that has maybe been a little bit more on the culture, on the political side, that maybe traditionally has been a little bit more on the culture war against libraries. It's neat to see her out there. It's neat to see others who are supporting libraries the way we should. I guess while we're, you know, having that conversation, what could we do? What could local leaders do? What could all of us do to kind of help get the word out more about what libraries need, what the Urban Libraries Council needs, what kind of advocacy people could do? What's the call to action here?
I think the call to action is for people to more fully understand the scope and impact of public libraries within their communities. Because once you recognize it and realize all of these aspects that libraries are providing from a service perspective in a city, you're able to kind of step back and say, wow, we should be supporting that at a higher level because per dollar in, the dollars out are so doing so much better than we could utilize them in other ways. And so, you know, tell your local government that we should be spending more on libraries. Talk to your state legislators about how it's important that we spend more on public libraries, that we support them in different ways. And frankly, you know, certainly reach out to your House member and your senator and let them know the importance of what's happening in your public library. Because certainly we get, you know, House members as well as senators coming out to events at public libraries. I think many of them get it to a certain degree, but a lot of what we've been doing is educating them and really helping them understand different ways that libraries can support community members. And, you know, when you do, they get it. They completely understand it. It's just right now, not everybody understands what's happening.
Hopefully we can level that situation. Oh, man, it just drives me bananas. But I'm with you. I'm an optimist. And of course, the miracles that happen from libraries are far, far, far outweigh the few negatives. And I have a feeling that short term, maybe even or long term for sure, maybe even a little bit on the shorter term, hopefully we'll be able to defeat this rise of negativity. All right. Now, let me ask you an important question.
Yep.
For you. Are you an ebook reader? Or are you reading real paper books?
So I'm a mix. The one reason I like ebooks is just I ride the subway a lot, the metro here in Washington, D.C., as well as I travel a lot. And so for me, being able to read books on my phone or on my iPad is incredibly important. But there's nothing better. I mean, that chair right behind me, I love to just sit in and read a paper book. So, you know, it just depends on what kind of book I might be reading. Fiction, I tend to read more on, you know, e-content, but, you know, nonfiction, probably a little bit more paper books.
And there's something too, I think, holding this treasure that somebody else has also looked at, the smell.
Oh, I mean, yeah.
The
history of books is amazing.
Oh. just amazing. And I think right when they wanted to count paper books out, now they seem to have this this great resurgence, and it's impressive to see. And of course, you can find it all at your local library. Brooks Rainwater, thank you so much for being with us. The Urban Libraries Council, the call to action obviously is easy. People can get on the phone, make sure that their state representatives, that their local leaders understand, their state leaders and their congressmen understand the importance of community. As Brooks Rainwater said, they serve community needs. And, you know, for all of our the way of approaching the library, I really like this. I scribbled down what you said here, that the better nature of humanity is openness. And I think we find that at our libraries. Thank you so much, Brooks Rainwater. Anybody can look up the Urban Libraries Council online and find a way to continue to support your local libraries. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.